entirely comfortable with this line of debate. No, not at all. It turned out not to be necessary. We found we could tolerate each other's company without it. Zebra arched an eyebrow. You and the canopy rich kid actually hit it off. After a fashion, I said, feeling oddly defensive. From across the atrium, Methuselah flicked a pelvic fin, and the suddenness of the gesture, no matter how feeble or involuntary, generated a mild frisson amongst the onlookers, as if a statue had just twitched. I wondered what kind of synaptic process had triggered that gesture, whether there was any intention behind it, or whether, like the creaking of an old house, Methuselah occasionally just moved no closer to thought than wood. "Did you sleep with her?" Zebra asked. "No," I said. "Sorry to disappoint you, but there just wasn't time." "You're not comfortable talking about this, are you?" "Would you be?" I shook my head, as much to clear it of confusion as to deny anything deeper about my relationship with Chantrelle. I expected to hate her for what she did, the way she played the game. But as soon as I started talking to her, I realized it wasn't that simple. From her point of view, there was nothing barbaric about it at all. "Nice and convenient, that. I mean, she didn't realize, or believe, that the victims were not the kind of people she'd been told they were. Until she met you." I nodded carefully. I think I gave her pause for thought. "You've given us all pause for thought, Tanner." And then Zebra drank what remained of her tea in silence. "You again," the mixmaster said, in a tone which conveyed neither pleasure nor disappointment, but a highly refined amalgam of the two. "I had imagined that I had answered all your questions satisfactorily during your last visit. Evidently I was mistaken." His heavy-lidded gaze alighted on Zebra, a twinge of non-recognition disturbing the genetically enhanced placidity of his expression. "Madam, I see, has had a considerable makeover since the last occasion." It had been Chantrelle, of course, but I decided to let the bastard have his amusement. "She had the number of a good blood-cutter," I said. "And you emphatically didn't," the mixmaster said, sealing the outer door of his parlour against other visitors. "I'm talking about the eye work, of course," he said, ensconcing himself behind his floating console while the two of us stood. "But why don't we dispense with the lie that this work had any connection with blood cutters?" "What's he talking about?" Zebra asked, entirely with justification. "A small internal matter," I said. "This gentleman," the mixmaster said, with labored emphasis on the last word, "visited me a day ago to discuss some genetic and structural anomalies in his eyes. At the time he claimed that the anomalies were the result of inferior intervention by blood cutters. I was even prepared to believe him, though the edited sequence bore none of the usual signatures of blood-cutter work. And now? Now I believe that the changes were done by another faction entirely. Shall I spell it out?"
"Please do."
"The work bears certain signatures which suggest that the sequences were inserted using the genetics techniques common to ultras. Neither more nor less advanced than blood-cutter or mixmaster work, just different and highly individual. I should have realized much sooner." He allowed himself a smile, obviously impressed by his own deductive skills. "When mixmasters perform a genetic service, it's essentially permanent, unless the client specifies otherwise. That doesn't mean that the work isn't reversible in most cases. It just means that the genetic and physiological changes will be stable against reversion to the older form. Bloodcutter work is the same, for the simple reason that bloodcutter sequences are generally bootlegged from mixmasters.